Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. 25 years ago, agreement was reached on the North American Free Trade Agreement. It's a trade pact that gradually eliminated most tariffs and trade barriers between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Has NAFTA been good or bad for the U.S.? Has it been good or bad for South Dakota? Today, we welcome Russell Green to the program. He's a Will Clayton Fellow in International Economics for Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. He joins us on the phone from Houston, Texas. Russell Green, welcome.
Thank you, Lori. I'm glad to be here.
NAFTA is in the news recently. Give us an idea of why and where we stand now in changes or negotiations.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, NAFTA was a landmark agreement. It was one of the first agreements between an advanced economy and a developing economy that really lowered trade barriers in a significant way and paved the way for a significant expansion of U.S.-Mexico trade. Of course, this has been criticized because the U.S. runs a trade deficit with Mexico. I think it's the third largest bilateral trade deficit that the U.S. has. And so the Trump administration has requested that this be renegotiated with the aim of reducing that trade deficit. And as you mentioned, the negotiations have just begun yesterday in Washington.
Who's involved in those negotiations? Can you tell us?
The lead for the United States is the U.S. Trade Representative, Lighthizer, who really has the same views of the treaty as the president does. On the Mexican side, it's their Ministry of the Economy. And from the Mexican side, I think, as well as the Canadian side, the treaty was not something that really needed a major rework, although they were happy to sign on to changes in the treaty that were embedded in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP agreement that President Trump pulled the U.S. out of on his first day in office. So the TPP agreement that had been in the works is probably the starting point for these negotiations.
Does NAFTA matter as much as we think it does? Does it matter more than we think it does? What's at stake here?
So NAFTA mattered a lot at the beginning when it was first implemented back in 1994. And the reason it mattered was because Mexico had put in place a series of reforms that made it a much better place to do business with. But there wasn't a lot of certainty on the business side that the government in Mexico might not change its mind. And what the NAFTA treaty did is really lock in a lot of those reforms, and it made Mexico an attractive place for investment and for developing cross-border supply chains. And that laid the foundations for tremendous growth of trade between the two countries. Of course, it also lowered the traditional trade barriers like tariffs and quotas and things like that. But the largest impact really came from reducing uncertainty about the business climate in Mexico. The great thing for us today is that all of that is done, and there's nothing we can do to NAFTA today that, even if we got rid of NAFTA today, that would undo the comfort that businesses have now with Mexico. Of course, if there were a dramatic shift politically in Mexico, something might happen. But the bottom line is that in terms of the totality of U.S. trade with Mexico, or certainly as a share of U.S. GDP, the NAFTA agreement itself is not the critical piece of any of those. So my calculations indicate that 75% of U.S.-Mexico trade happened either because of that original impact of NAFTA or simply organically over time because we're close neighbors. And so the treaty itself is not the main component.
Give me an idea of how much politics and sort of the campaign of President Trump when he was a candidate, sort of talking about these trade deals. How much does politics play into the negotiation versus just looking at the economics or the business side of things?
I would say politics is central to the overall negotiating strategy. in the sense that, of course, the U.S. administration feels like it needs to live up to its promises to do something about the treaty. The statement that the U.S. Trade Representative's office put out about the negotiating objectives of the United States started with trying to reduce the deficit between the U.S. and Mexico, and the language that Lighthizer used yesterday to open the negotiations was pretty aggressive in criticizing the deficit and the treaty. Similarly, in Mexico, they have a presidential election coming up next year, and this is a potentially explosive issue in Mexican politics. U.S.-Mexico trade is much, much more important for the Mexican economy, and so NAFTA matters a lot more for Mexico than it does for the U.S., and should the treaty be shifted dramatically in favor of the United States, this would be a big political issue in their presidential campaign. And so the Mexican negotiating strategy is to try to get this done as soon as possible so that by the time the presidential election rolls around, it won't be a hot button topic anymore. Canada has a presidential election coming, but not for a while. And so it has, of any of the three parties, Canada has the best ability to wait out, you know, to say, sorry, I'm not going to accept that, and we'll just hold on to what we have now. In other words, they have the best ability to veto anything that they object to because they have the least urgency to get a deal through.
Can any of these parties pull out at any time? Is that how it works? They can just walk away from it?
Yes. I would say that if one of the parties pulled out of the negotiations, that would push in the direction of NAFTA falling apart completely. Mm-hmm. But that would be sort of the nuclear option. I mean, it would be politically very difficult given how embedded the trade structure is in all three economies.
Let's talk about a state like South Dakota. Mm-hmm. What do individual farmers, producers, business owners, who's the most impacted, who has been the most over the past 25 years impacted by NAFTA?
Yeah, well, in a state like South Dakota, for certain, there's a high degree of exposure to NAFTA, particularly through the tariffs that are placed on agricultural trade. I think 25% of South Dakota's total exports go to Mexico, and the vast preponderance of that is different kinds of animal feed. So, folks who are in, say, sugar beet production or byproducts of animal processing and things like that that go into animal feed, a lot of that is going in, is being sent down, sold in Mexico. And so those are the folks who are most exposed, and that isn't – so South Dakota's story is a little bit different from the rest of the country because that trade was not facilitated by an improvement in Mexico's business climate, at least not directly. Rather, that was probably much more of a story of tariffs being reduced. And so if there were a circumstance where – tariff barriers were raised back up again on agricultural products, that's where South Dakota would sit most exposed.
So how much, when the negotiations are happening, I'm curious, mm-hmm. how much do individual states have a say in that? Or is it the congressional delegation that is sort of sending a message? Is it farmer and producers advocacy groups? When we sit down and have those negotiations, is it just how broad is it? How many voices are actually in the room?
Yeah. Well, actually, in the room is a small number of voices, just by the necessity that there's a limit. You know, when you're doing a negotiation, you have to be able to.
But metaphorically,
speak with one voice. But yeah.
I mean metaphorically. Yes.
Yeah. So the U.S. Trade Representative, as well as Congress, held hearings, public hearings, where they heard from dozens and dozens of representatives of different kinds of groups, whether it was farmers or consumer advocates or the U.S. Manufacturing Association, immigrant rights groups. I mean, all kinds of voices were listened to in the process of planning the U.S. negotiation strategy. And at the end of the day, whatever treaty is negotiated, the Senate still has to ratify it. Now it's not, they're not able to negotiate it renegotiate it line by line. It's an up or down vote, but certainly the South Dakota senators will have influence on the ultimate product, because they can tell the administration immediately, you know, what their priorities are and what their red lines are in terms of supporting the ultimate revision of the treaty.
Have there been environmental impacts or impacts other than simply, you know, an economic impact between one country and the other? How far do the ripples of NAFTA go out?
You know, it's interesting. I would say the biggest ripples came from immigration, in the sense that U.S., particularly row crop production, so corn, is so much more efficient than what the little family farmers in Mexico were doing, that NAFTA, a lot of people feel like NAFTA put a lot of family farmers out of business in Mexico, and then those farmers sought jobs in big cities in Mexico, and then that trickled into illegal immigrants crossing the border. And so there was this boom of illegal immigration. It peaked sometime in the late 90s after NAFTA was, maybe in 2000, after NAFTA had come into effect largely. And so...
Was that permanent?
This is one of these unintended consequences that...
Sure.
That by essentially driving Mexican peasants off of farms through much more efficient agricultural production, they needed to find work somewhere, and a lot of them wound up coming to the U.S. Now, that bulge of illegal immigration has completely died off by now, and so it's not, you couldn't ever argue that we should remove the trade benefits of NAFTA in order to stop illegal immigration from Mexico, because that wave came once and it's finished. And so it's not going to get reversed by any changes to NAFTA today.
How do tensions and rhetoric about immigration and about a border wall, for example, impact negotiations over NAFTA?
Well, I can't imagine that it helps. But, you know, the actual negotiators on all three sides are folks who know each other from the original NAFTA negotiations. And so hopefully they're going to be able to rise above the rhetoric, and when the doors are closed, put that rhetoric behind and really get down to business in a friendly and respectful way. But it never helps. If you were Mexico and you were considering making a concession in order to get the deal done, and then the United States said something that was, in your view, quite disrespectful, it wouldn't make it easier for you politically to accept that concession, because already you're sort of, the popular perception is that the U.S. is unfairly treating Mexico, and so then if you make a concession, it's just going to feed the fire domestically. And so given that Mexico's president is relatively unpopular, and his party is worried about this next presidential election, it's not helpful.
What are the options on the table? Is there an option to leave it as it is? Are there major themes that we expect to see adjusted?
So I don't think that we're going to wind up leaving the treaty as it is, and I also don't think we're going to wind up with that nuclear scenario of abandoning the treaty altogether. My guess is that we start with a template that looks a lot like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which largely didn't touch the U.S.-Mexico tariff structure, but it did add some protections for cross-border investment. It made requirements of compliance with environmental rights and labor rights more enforceable. It modernized the treaty in terms of adding intellectual property and e-commerce. And it had some harmonization of standards that will allow trade to flow more seamlessly. All of those things are fantastic. They'll help businesses on both sides, or I guess all three countries, take advantage of efficiencies and operate more efficiently. It'll provide benefits to consumers, and it'll help protect, particularly when we talk about environmental and labor standards, it'll help level the playing field so that companies don't move to Mexico just to take advantage of lower standards. So all those things are good, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of controversy in accepting those. Where there's going to be sticking points is the U.S. has a couple of demands. One is there is an appellate process whereby when if the U.S. takes a trade measure, Canada and Mexico can appeal, and it works both ways. If Canada or Mexico does something, the U.S. can appeal as well. But the U.S. would like to remove that appellate procedure, which would make it easier to punish any one of those three countries for perceived trade violations. And that's that's a red line for Mexico and Canada, because they think the U.S. will then start punishing them willy-nilly without, for things that aren't legitimate trade practices. And then the second thing is the U.S. would like to have a Buy America program where we restrict in the government procurement process, we restrict the potential bidders for government projects to American companies. This is something that the U.S. is a big change for the U.S. because we've long gone around the world pushing other countries to open up their procurement processes through an open government procurement process that we think ultimately, or I should say we, that many people feel the U.S. ultimately benefits from, because we've got lots of competitive businesses that could win government contracts around the world. And in the case of NAFTA, Mexican and Canadian companies enjoy that as well, because there are things that the U.S. government procures from Canadian and Mexican companies, and they would rather have their own procurement systems open and have it be a free system. So that's going to be another sticking point. The interesting thing about the negotiations is while the USTR, the U.S. Trade Representative, states that one of their primary objectives in negotiating this treaty is to reduce the bilateral trade deficit with Mexico, when you look at then what are the points that they want to negotiate, and there's nothing there that really would have a significant impact on the trade deficit. And so none of those items that I just listed, whether uncontroversial or controversial, would dramatically shift the U.S.-Mexico trade deficit. So to a degree, it appears that the administration is all bark and no bite, in the sense that these aggressive opening comments at the beginning of the negotiations yesterday may not necessarily translate into a real hard-nosed strategy to shift the treaty in favor of the U.S. once the doors are closed.
Russell Green is a Will Clayton Fellow in International Economics for Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. We've been talking about NAFTA. I know that we could keep talking about this for some time, so I'm hoping you'll come back and join us again.
Our
time is short for today, but come back as the story develops.
Thank you very much for having me.